Thank you. Just a couple of things. That wasn't Aristotle's deal. That was just a group of investors. I don't know if you remember it. I think it was in the early 80s or late 70s that wanted to put an oil refinery, what they call teapot oil refineries, stainless steel deal, down at the bottom of Corrigan Hill. When you go past over Mount Prospect where Weeks State Park is and you look out to all that beauty, they were going to put a oil refinery right there smack dab in the middle of it. And the town of Lancaster, which is so terribly important to remember because of, I think of the fellow who called in from Stratford during the exchange program the other day, worried about schools and taxes. Lancaster was so desperate at that time for revenues and for some employment, that it was going to employ two or three people, that 70% of the town voted to approve it. And it was going to happen with that local approval. But the investors, who were represented by one relatively classy fellow in a three-piece suit through most of the discussions, withdrew only because Jimmy Carter eliminated from his budget the subsidy for teapot dome refineries. And the subsidy, like the case with tax credits for power, was the only reason that made it feasible, plus the fact that at that time the pipeline carried crude oil. They'd be if that project had gone forward, the subsidy and the oil both leaving, we'd be looking at a refusing to rust stainless steel edifice down there that nobody was doing anything with. And that's sort of the attitude that you find. Yeah, maple syrup, he says. That's sort of the attitude, unfortunately, that investors and others will have when they look toward their goals without understanding yours or the place where they're going to do it. And it is unfortunately callous. And that callousness is just a fact of life that we need to be aware of, because it's what leads to projects that have no discretion. The other thing I wanted to mention that I didn't learn until I finally got into looking through the some of the blogs this week was that the express line that Peter referenced, the reason that's happening underwater and underground is because people in New York defeated the proposal to do it above the ground 2 years before. And Pataki, when governor, and Schumer, the senator, all got wrapped up in the public voice, the overwhelming public voice there in New York, and said this thing is crazy and shouldn't happen, and it didn't. So there is hope in that, as there is in the reality that 30 years ago, when some of you and some of us were dealing with the issue then, we succeeded in not having it located here in northern New Hampshire. And a lot of that had to do with the relationships that were developed over the course of that controversy with people like Mike Love, who was chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, and others who visited our communities and said, you know, this isn't the right thing to have happen here. And Governor Gallen, who had originally come out in favor of the project, ended up opposing it, taking a position against it. So the way things start out is not the way they need to end up. But boy, I can tell you, that was a smaller line and by comparison, a smaller effort. This is going to be a major effort against a major line. Some of what I'm going to get into might be on the dull side. But it's my 37th year of being in this business, and with looking back over that time, I felt I had to wade into the subject a bit, and I do have a bunch of notes here. But I want to demonstrate that what I'm going to say is more than just a personal opinion. I do it because I know there are those in the press and in our own communities, though I can't find many of them, who don't think that a project like this really can impact local values or do so negatively, or who feel that the trade-offs are somehow worth it. I'm going to say tonight that they're not worth it. But I think also the goal of this thing, and the reason why I'm going to get into some of the complexities is that, in a basic kind of way, is that I think we all need to arm ourselves with the ability to say to those who don't understand how dilatory this thing could be, we need to explain to them factually and actually that these are the dangers that we're facing and these are the things that can happen. And it isn't just going to happen to the landowners who might be in this room. If it happens to one of us, it happens to all of us, because this is a community and we are a collection of communities where we cannot take off an arm and have a whole body, or lose a finger and have a whole hand. We are all part of the body, and if one of us suffers, we all suffer, and I'll say that again when it comes to business later in my remarks. So let's begin with the basics about real estate. There are three types of real property, real estate: depreciation, things that create calculable losses in value. The first category is physical depreciation, where something's age or condition as a result of wear and tear can reduce its value. It just isn't in the same shape that it was when it was constructed. The second is functional depreciation, where something may no longer perform efficiently the job that it was intended to do, so that it is outdated, no longer relevant to the task, like the oil refinery, thank God we don't have in Lancaster. And then there is economic. Economic is when outside or external factors impact property negatively to reduce its value. It's why we have zoning in some towns. So we can't put something in a residential zone, for example, that will offend the market, eliminate the desire for that property, and reduce its value. It can happen if you live in a residential area and you're sort of near Main Street, and on Main Street they suddenly put in a huge truck stops for some reason, or something that creates noise and lights and disturbance, so that all of a sudden if you're next to it, your house loses some value because nobody can have peaceful use and enjoyment anymore. That's an economic depreciation. It can also result from environmental degradation, which can include the effect of above-ground transmission lines. And in fact, here in the North Country, as we all know, environmental impacts are economic impacts. The relationship between the environment and economic development, between environmental factors and economic opportunity, are explicit and inseparable in a place where expectations of quality are high, where people, including many of you, come or stay, often for the sole purpose of being distant from degradation that has occurred elsewhere. And sometimes people come here, as so many of you have, at the sacrifice of advantages that might be more available someplace else. So you choose to be here because of the quality of what is here. Here, the compromise of aesthetic value has a major and negative impact on the marketability and value of real estate, as well as on those businesses that market themselves for the values that are inherent to this area. There are any number, and I'm going to mention a couple of them, any number of scholarly statistical studies that back up such intuitive and experiential precepts, each focused on specific markets for the purpose of analyzing available data. One entitled "A Meta-Analysis of the Effect of Environmental Contamination and Positive Amenities on Residential Real Estate Values" included as environmental contamination such things as underground storage tanks, Superfund sites, landfills, water and air pollution, power lines, pipeline ruptures, nuclear power plants, animal feedlots, and urban nuisances, you know what I'm trying to say, including noise, all of which create a rather distinguished company for a power line to fall into. It found that each is affected by certain variables. Each one of these pollutants, each example of degradation, is affected by certain variables, including the distance from the subject that you're analyzing, the type of contamination it represents, the presence of offsetting positive amenities, the geographic region, what people knew about the threats that were involved when they purchased something, as well as the general market and other conditions that existed at the times of sale. The studies primarily involve urban settings where data is available in quantity and where these things have occurred. So percentages of impact and degrees of influence cannot simply be transferred to another market any more than the use of a sale of a home here can tell you what a home is worth in Manchester. Analysis of the methods of analysis have been performed to test these findings. Something called the hedonic regression analyses of the price studies that were performed to closely and carefully test and define the variables and the comparables in order to validate conclusions. So this isn't just Peter talking about an opinion. This is what people have determined as a result of very sophisticated analysis. What it all demonstrates is that undesirable land uses, as they may be defined in any given area, consistently produce negative signs of statistical significance with fluctuations in dollar amounts due to factors such as distance, the amount of information that was available, how much was known about a specific use or hazard, and neighborhood characteristics and visibility. A study in the city of Brossard, Canada, entitled Power Lines, Visual Encumbrances and House Values, a Microspatial Approach to Impact Measurement, again referred in an urban setting to the variables of proximity, the view of lines and pylons, the type and height of structures, the quality of landscaping within the easement. If you can picture being in an urban area, you might have something under the power line that was actually cultivated and landscaped, all of which affect the degree of increase or decrease in what they termed, quote, negative externalities. The point being that to one degree or another, values are affected. Another study that was sent up to me by Will Abbott from the Forest Society occurred in Wisconsin in another urban-like subdivision where views generally included both a railroad track and a industrial park on the other side of it, but showed that where the view also included a power line, there was a very significant, substantial reduction in what people would pay for a lot within that already slightly corrupted division when they had to look at a power line. Here's the point for us in all of this, because as I said, things differ from one place to another in degree. The degree of impact largely depends on the aesthetic baseline, which in some urban neighborhoods may be low to begin with. But here, it is very high, for we start with clean, beautiful, and unobstructed. And the degree of change from baseline predicts the amount of loss to value. So that which removes amenities here or changes things has a greater impact than it does where things are already changed. Health impacts, where closer proximity is involved, is certainly a major factor, whether or not there is certainty as to the health impact. There are tons of studies and they're not all in agreement. There are brochures out there that refer to many of them that talk about those impacts and those consequences of being close to a power line. But somebody can stand up and say, well, here's a study that says it's okay. Regardless, courts in Texas and New York have ruled in the past that evidence of fear in the marketplace and the ensuing economic damage to property should be admissible as grounds for compensation, irrespective of the reasonableness of the fear. For example, whether a hazard to children has been proven or not, the fear of the unproven hazard is enough to affect behavior, and what we're doing is measuring behavior. Reference was made to prudent avoidance, where people will avoid the risk of economic loss or negative health impacts by simply not purchasing property where that risk is exposed, and the property becomes stigmatized. And being stigmatized, I can tell you, is no less miserable for property or neighborhoods or entire communities than it is for an individual. And we all know how harmful being stigmatized can be to individuals and families when it comes to issues of health, disease, or other burdens of social circumstance. This is happening now in many circumstances, this stigmatization and this prudent avoidance, along the path of both the preferred and the alternate routes of the Northern Pass. We've heard Tom talk about his concerns and experience. With anecdotes coming in from Plymouth to Franconia to sections of Pittsburgh and this town being reported, as well as in Dalton and Groveton, where I am pressed in my business to advise whether properties can be sold for what otherwise might be their fair market value due to the anticipation of this project, and what the degree of loss might be within a given time frame. I mean, imagine yourselves as you are with a need to sell something and being confronted with this project, and imagine me trying to respond to somebody and try to predict whether they can sell it, what they can expect for a loss as a result of it, how long it might take, and what the dilemma I'm going to have, as Tom said so well, when I sit down and deal with a buyer who I have to inform, because many of them won't be, that this thing could come to pass. This whole project is a current and present threat to marketability and value for the marketplace here, right now, today. I can say that you can sell almost anything if you are willing to drop your price enough to do so. The question being, how much less are you willing to take, and to whom will you be selling it, for what purpose? And that suggests the downward spiral of economic depreciation, and that is the evidence for loss in value. You don't need a lot of studies to intuitively understand that. And just as positive amenities like natural beauty and unobstructed views here, or parks, or better education facilities, or transportation improvements in urban settings, all add to value, so does degradation and the loss of amenity detract from value here. To quote one of the studies, contamination affects property values through impact on the real estate bundle of rights. Bundle of rights is a term of art that people use to describe those things which you get from owning property. They include the rights to possess, enjoy, control, and dispose of real property. A loss can occur in ways other than the discounted sale. See, it isn't just what you lose when you sell, but if you continue to own it, you can lose access to capital, the ability to finance or refinance. And when your sale is delayed, you experience discounts through losses through the time value of money, the cost of continuing to own something, and what you surrender by not being able to extract your equity and put it to some other use. I also want to caution that if anyone you're talking to is satisfied that he or she will not look out on something like this line in an objectionable way, it does not free them from impact. If one part of a community is weakened, as I said before, we are all weakened. And those whose values may appear to survive will have to carry part of the burdens now carried by those whose values will be directly lowered. As burdens grow for taxes and infrastructure, it will be harder to find others willing to pay full value for the opportunity to assume those greater burdens as reflected in higher tax rates. And if a segment of our business community, such as that related to tourism, or individual businesses within that industry, are weakened or discouraged and turn to reductions in employment or spending as a result, then all business and all enterprise and the entire community will suffer in turn. There are more losers than winners under such circumstances, and I want to interject here just a little basic thing. I'm not an economist, but you have two segments of your economy. One is the sheltered economy, where you and I do each other's laundry and we take a dollar and pass it back and forth. The other is the tradable sector of the economy, where you create a product and send it beyond your boundaries to bring capital back within your boundary, or in some other way create a service or a good which brings new capital into your community. Without that new capital, you will not survive, because we cannot sustain ourselves with only a sheltered economy. It has to be significantly enhanced by the tradable sector of the economy. That's why the paper industry was such a benefit to the region, because we had large employment, products were sent out, dollars were brought back, local ownership, local benefits through taxation and so forth and so on accrued to the community, to the region, to the state. That is gone from our area, and it's not likely that manufacturing to that degree will be replaced. So what is left? Among the things that is so terribly important in that sector is tourism. So when you think about tourism, it isn't just the guy who sort of ephemerally has something to do with dealing with tourists down the road. It has to do with bringing people into the area who leave their money behind, infusing us with capital that can then filter through the rest of the community. So to the extent that we allow someone to tackle that base and whittle away at it even further, we are really digging ourselves, or allowing them to dig a very deep hole for us, because we'll be losing more and more of what is needed to bring capital into the area. It simply won't flow here. Real estate does that sometimes when someone will come up and spend a couple of $100,000 for something and leave the money in the community, or borrow it from the bank and make payments to the bank and see it filter through, but that's also going to be affected. So we have some very fundamental things to worry about here, and it is not something that just the landowner or just the guy who's going to have this in his view gets to worry about. This is something that the entire community, every business, the entire region, the state has to worry about. Tourism in this state represents, if Steve Barber were here, he could tell you, a very high percentage of our gross product. We probably would say that right now it represents even a higher percentage of the North Country's gross product. This thing has to be carefully guarded, this part of our industry. I'm fond of saying to people from other parts of the state that here in the North Country, we are the stewards of the image which the rest of New Hampshire has of itself, but which often cannot any longer be found in other parts of New Hampshire. But when it comes to protecting that image, which the entire state relies upon, along with our icons, when it markets itself to the world, when it comes to protecting that, we are too often left on our own. And that's why the message tonight about talking to your legislators and everybody else you can get a hold of is so important, because these points really have to be driven home. I think it obvious from this discussion that over time, insofar as perceived property tax benefits are concerned, as we battle and negotiate with the utilities or with the depreciated assets and reductions in assessed value, like Littleton has been doing, and I'm sure you've seen that they're in the process right now of paying back $6.1 million in what the courts declared to be an overassessment to TransCanada for the utilities assets in the town of Littleton, tremendously impacting their budgets for many years. As we go forward, the evidence is going to build over the loss of current values in properties that are affected by this when sales occur, and the data goes into the system that this sale occurred at a lesser value than it had before. That database is going to build. And short-term gains in immediate taxation of the line, which will be reduced over time as you go to court and fight with them, which we all do already, all of our towns, that is going to turn into long-term, those short-term gains are going to turn into long-term losses through the reduction of current improvements. And that makes it a bad deal for property-based tax systems and industries. And it isn't only the loss of the value of current improvements, your house, my house, your business, my business, but the loss of future improvement and future investment in the community. In Lancaster, I'm fortunate enough to be able to think of two homes, very nice homes, one still under construction and another which has been there for a couple of years, that together, two of them, add up to the company professed value of $2.5 million per mile. So there's 1 mile offset by two homes. I can tell you, especially in the case of, well, in both of their cases, neither one of them, neither one of those properties would have been built, nor the contractors paid, nor the dollars flowed through the community, nor the banks benefited from the introduction of this new wonderful prospect from outside to borrow and pay and do things in our community. Neither one of those things would have happened if they were looking out on a view that included this power line. So understanding that, we know that in the future, in the town of Lancaster, I guess it's 5 miles, 5 miles along that thing, there are, we can predict that wherever it's seen along that route, there will not be improvements of that kind made in those locations. And how do you measure that? How do you measure what those future values might be? What you can measure is what depreciated values and loss of asset assessment is going to amount to as we deal with the power lines over time. So here we are at the beginning, not of this particular battle. Somebody pointed out last time that we're well into it. But we're again in a battle over a power line. The smaller line that was defeated and absorbed by Vermont, our neighbor, and I question whether it's a great strategy to throw somebody else under the bus all the time, any more than any of you should, or any of us should throw anybody to our south under the bus. Nevertheless, that's what happened. But that line has grown to a larger line with more power 30 years later, a proposal for it, because that's what the industry does. That's what change and growth bring about. We would like to send that to Vermont as well, where if we do, it will grow the power line taller and wider. If it happens here instead, we will surely be visited again in the future, as they themselves have predicted and planned, they meaning the utilities, and taller and wider may be pressed on us at even greater cost to local values and future economies. So this is not the end. I've been up here for almost 40 years, and I feel as though every few years I'm going to turn around and pull out the sword again and go to battle to defend my countryside. I'm not even in the National Guard. But that's the feeling you get if you live long enough to endure it. Finally, a comment to the landowners that we should all make to our friends who are landowners, and especially those who we can find out are along this path. And I'm going to do it with a real estate voice, knowing that in a few minutes, Bob's more competent legal voice will be saying this in a better way, I'm sure. But you don't have to cooperate with them. Everybody needs to know that you don't have to cooperate with them. You don't have to permit access or enter into negotiations. Bob, because he's an attorney, will tell you that he's not going to advise you because that can't be his position, but he is going to tell you to get some legal advice. I'm going to tell you, don't cooperate with them because it is not in your best interest to cooperate. And the agents, and you don't have to negotiate with them if at some point they begin to want to negotiate with you. There are agents out there, and I was contacted by an engineering firm and asked if I would take on this responsibility of going out to visit with landowners, and I, in writing, said no, I would not. And I told them why. But somebody, of course, is going to be hired, and they have been. And there's nothing against them for doing that. That's their choice. And the compensation is significant. So there are people out there who are contacting our neighbors and our friends already. And they're doing it early in the hopes that they will catch us in an unsophisticated position, uninformed and unaware. And they will probably suggest that they are not just buying the land, but only the right to cross it. And that some of your bundle of rights will still be yours. We're not taking them all. And therefore, we don't have to pay you for that whole bundle of rights. And there will be people who will be either desperate or frightened or concerned or assume, as one of our representatives thought not too long ago, that this was a done deal and there's nothing you can do, so I guess I'll just cooperate. That's the wrong thing to do. Again, non-legal, urgent advice, don't negotiate, don't cooperate. They aren't going to measure the real value, the effect on what remains, the cost to what you retain of severing from your property the rights that they will receive. There may still be a question, and I defer to Bob on all of this, as to whether they can exercise eminent domain. That's still out there in my brain. If they do, it's probable that your position will be improved over what it would be if you're negotiating with them, because they will have to determine under New Hampshire law the value before the taking and compare it to the value after the taking and compensate you for the difference.
Peter?
Yes?
Let me make one point that's along those lines. If you were to sell to them now, you will reduce the value of your property in terms of what you would ever get later. So you will never get any more for your property by selling to them and then being able to sell it later, because you will have given up that portion of the value that that you give up when you have this power line run through your property. So don't get fooled into thinking that you're gaining something you're not. Only temporarily do you gain a little something, and then it goes away. You never get it back.
And I guess that my point would be that given that, you may come out better through an eminent domain proceeding than through a negotiation, but it probably and most assuredly would not be good enough. It defies prediction when something like this is the subject of adjudication. You know, you can't go into a court proceeding, although everybody, I guess, does, thinking I've got the case. You don't know how those things are going to turn out or what value will be determined. Certainly today's value would be one of the bases for that whole process, and today's values stink. So it advantages them greatly and us not at all to have this happening at this time. They will also not account for future value, the rewards of long-term ownership. They won't think about what will be important to you some years ahead if you want to sell something to meet an emergency or to meet some future need for education or a health circumstance or retirement or your access to greater value by borrowing and using that greater value as leverage to meet one of those needs. That none of that will or can be considered in what might happen today. And the dream of keeping cherished property in a family for generations may be discouraged and lost when the values which made it so cherished are taken away. That is a value that will never be compensated, but believe me, it can be lost. So those are my thoughts and remarks, and I'll be happy to take any questions.